And good afternoon again. This is Ramin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording. Welcome to another episode. With this episode today, with my guest that we're going to get to know here in a minute, we are recording episode 247, I believe, if the count is correct. And Friday and Thursday, Thursdays and Fridays for me are episode days. So I've been doing recording pretty much all day yesterday and today. Something that I enjoy doing, something that I enjoy communicating with people and having a conversation with people, meeting them the first time, like my guest today, my first time meeting Jose Florido, which we'll get to know in a second. The interesting part about today's conversation, today's episode number 247 is, and this is what drew me to this conversation, right? So, you know, I got the initial conversation from your team and you know, one sentence in that pitch that really captured my attention: 175 million images and videos every single month. That number stopped me, to be honest with you. And when I first read it, because behind every one of these assets is a brand trying to say something specific in a specific language to a specific person somewhere around the world. The question I keep asking myself after 30 years in the localization industry, and as you guys know, this is the localization industry. So we deal with localization topic all the time, which is language, communicating, you know, translating between demographic languages, etc. So it's an interesting topic for me. It's an important topic for me. So after 30 years in this industry and that kind of velocity, that kind of content being created, it's also worth asking the question. One is, who's protecting the meaning of those of this content? Today, we are going to find out. My guest is Jose Florido, Chief Growth Officer of a company. Now, they used to be called the Free Pick Company. Now, they rebranded to Magnific. And Magnific is the new name. And that's happened recently. My understanding from the brief, the conversation that Jose and I had this morning, this afternoon. And, an icebreaker here and just a spoiler alert for people. Jose is in Beijing, you know, like right now for me, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Probably for him, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't know. And he's staying with me to do the podcast at 2 a.m. in the morning. So God bless you. Thank you very much for being with me. I really appreciate it. And allow me to tell you a little bit about Jose. Jose Florido leads the growth at Magnific, previously called the Free Pick Company, a platform that has quietly become one of the most important infrastructure players in the global visual content, serving over 110 million professionals worldwide. What makes Magnific interesting to me isn't the scale, though the scale is staggering. It is the fact that they've built their model around what they call controllable AI, the idea that speed and brand fidelity don't have to be in conflict, which I really love that, because we talk about it on this channel. Speed sometimes kills fidelity, and otherwise in our language industry, we call it quality. I've been thinking about this for a long time since your team reached out to me a few weeks ago, and I've been thinking about this and waiting for this conversation. I'd like to dig into it a little bit further. I guess in our conversation, we'll get into it. Because the brands and the companies that they're consuming this content, they probably have the same question. And many of our audience probably are your customers and probably asking the question, you know, how does this work? So I wanted to understand how your team is solving to that. And I want to hear the honest version, not the pitch deck version, which, you know, everybody gets to know that one. So Jose, welcome to the conversation. I really appreciate you staying up at 2 a.m. in the morning in China for this, joining us all the way from Beijing. Thank you wholeheartedly from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for being a guest on our conversation. Welcome to the chat.
Yeah, hello. Thank you, Ramin. Thank you so much for having me.
I really appreciate it. Now, Jose, to get us started before we get into the topic of the hour, tell us a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind. What is your story? And what I mean by story is, where are you from? How did you get to where you are? And just to, just to, to connect who you are as a person to the business later.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Jose Florido. I was born in Spain, right? And southern Spain, completely in Malaga. It's a very
my
sunny.
My favorite town, my favorite yeah. city.
same. We agree on that. Yeah. So I was born in Malaga. So was Magnific, right? So Magnific is a company located in Malaga. So I'm a UX designer. So by training, basically I've been doing software and user experience design, including localization of software and making sure our experiences are understood and easy to use, no matter where you are or who you are, for more than 25 years now. I started doing website as a freelancer, right, in Malaga, and then I quickly moved to Madrid to work in a startup. My days in the startup was led me to work on a company called Panoramio around 2005, and actually one of my co-founders was Joaquin Cuenca, who is now the CEO of Magnific, right? So this company, Panoramio, was acquired by Google in 2007. So I moved to work for Google for several years. And that's how I moved from Spain to Switzerland first, and then to the US, to California. And I was working with Google as a designer there for around 6 years. Basically, kind of building up more experience, and I focus a lot on the product Google Maps at the time. I was one of the first designers in Google Maps and Google Earth. And after a few years there, I went back to start another company about advertisement that it was my own together with my wife. Was there for 8 more years. While I also had my children, I decided to stay in California. So I've been living in California, in San Francisco, since then. And most recently, after my second company, I joined Meta, Facebook. I was working in Facebook for 2 more years in Menlo Park in California. Then I worked for Spotify, also from San Francisco, as a designer, again, like a director of design. And then most recently, only 4 years ago, I joined Freepik, which is now named Magnific, right? And I joined Joaquin again, right? My co-founder from Panoramio. He's now the CEO of Magnific, right? So we are now back working together. So, and currently in Magnific, I started by leading the US business 4 years ago. I've transitioned to be the chief growth officer, and I'm right now in China because I'm leading the expansion into APAC market, right? So that's kind of my, from a very high level perspective, that's my career and where I come from.
Now, Jose, you're in China to expand to APAC. Why?
Well, we see a huge opportunity in the market. When we look at what is next for our company and our growth, APAC plays a very significant role, especially in the enterprise market that I lead. So we do B2B and B2C, right? And I lead the B2B side, and we see a lot of interest in solutions for marketing and creativity that use AI, like Magnific. And there is a lot of companies in brands and marketing teams and video production companies that are requiring these services in Asia and the Pacific.
Do you consider yourself B2C or B2B at Magnific?
Well, we are both. I think we passed the 1 million paid subscribers in the B2C side recently. The B2B side that I lead is a little bit more new. It's only 1 year old, but it's growing actually even faster than the B2C. And it's, you know, it's a larger market and grows fast, right? So I think we are now in both worlds, and the balance seems to be growing more into the B2B as we progress.
Now, as part of the job as a chief growth officer, which company means that you're sitting at the intersection of product revenue and market expansion, right? So, you know, you got to sit in the middle of those two, three categories. How is that role defined, Magnific, specifically, and what does your day actually look like in your job?
Yeah. So basically, my role, I think you define it very well, right? It sits in the intersection. But also, to be more very concrete, what I look after are three main areas, right? One is the enterprise sales team, right? So basically, how do we go out there with a sales motion and find new enterprises and large companies that want to use Magnific? The second one is what before we used to call marketing, now we call it growth, right? That is basically awareness and making sure people know about us, right? So we do a lot of event marketing, we do a lot of digital marketing, we do PR, right? We kind of get the word out there, for example, participating in podcasts and in other activities. And then the third part is what we call professional services. So professional services, in our case, is a large team of creatives that are specialized in AI and have a global presence, and they support our customers as they also adopt AI in their processes, right? So oftentimes these are marketing teams in brands that are transitioned from traditional production into production aided by AI. And because it's such a new technology and such new ways of working, our professional services team basically helps them from a strategic point of view in how to change the mindset into an AI first mentality.
And have you changed your website to Magnific now from FreePick? Or is that still?
No, we are now Magnific.com. Yeah.
Magnific.com. And how does it work for a user, for instance? What is the capability? What can you do with that?
Yeah. So when the user goes to Magnific.com, right, the first thing they will notice that they need to sign up, right, to create a free account or a paid account. And then they will be presented with a set of tools, right? And our tools allow to create or edit images, videos, and audios, right? So you can basically, let's say you need to do a campaign, right, for a brand, and your campaign requires or it consists of several static images, right, of the product, but also one video of the product. And those images and videos are going to be printed, they're going to be distributed on websites, and they're going to be used in social media, for example. Right? So you will go into the, for images, you will go into the main tool that is the image generator, right? And then by prompting and describing what you need, you will interact with AI to generate those images, right? Same with video, right? Once you have the images ready, the static images, you will use them as a reference to create a video. So you will again prompt and add your image and describe an ambience and a style, and you will create the video. And then the same with the audio, right? So you will be able to describe the background music, the voiceover. You can select among a lot of different voices from male and female voices from the world, different accents, many different languages, and add those voice over or that sound to the video, right? So you will end up having a set of files or assets that then you can download and use in your project. Right? So that's basically a very basic overview of what the tool can do.
So Jose, thanks for the explanation. I really appreciate that. I guess our audience right now, they're a bit more in tune with this, which is pretty interesting capability if you think about it. This is not your Gemini Nano Banana kind of a generation here. You seem to be taking us in a more specific, more powerful way of creating content, or specifically graphical content in this case, images, videos, audio. Audio, I really like the audio piece too, because if you're able now to generate audio and bolt it onto a video, you've got something custom that is made for you. Specifically in my case, I mean, people have various use cases for these things. And obviously in marketing, everything is possible and there's thousands of use cases for it. But in my case, I'm a podcaster, you know, just for me as I run my podcast show here. And I mentioned earlier, this is my number 247 episode. One thing for me I've struggled with, to be honest with you, is to create images, thumbnails for my YouTube channel. And I always do, you know, I go through Canva, I go through a bunch of other tools to create a, and this is the most painful or longest process of my post-editing process to create that YouTube thumbnail, right? Now, if anybody can create a YouTube thumbnail for me that is impactful, that has got like the theme, the criteria of what I'm trying to achieve at a lesser time, would be very, very welcoming news for me. Does it do something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, a lot of our users create their thumbnails for YouTube with us. This way, what I would recommend you to do is first to define your brand in the system, right? So there are ways to codify your logo, your colors, and the colors and the style that you want. You can also create what is called a character of your face, right? So, and then over time you can iterate those, but essentially once you have like a good set of components, you could prompt something like, give me Robin smiling and looking at, you know, to the right with this background, etc. And then it will influence the generation with your colors and all the context. So what you get is on brand, right? And that's very important because normally brands don't want any content. They want content that is on brand.
That reflects their brand, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, I guess Magnific and formerly Freepik started as a stock image search engine. It has become something much more complex, an AI-powered content infrastructure platform, as you were explaining to us earlier. From a growth perspective, what was the strategic inflection point? What was the strategic decision point where the company said, we're not just a library anymore. We're going to get into creation.
Yeah, absolutely. We started actually 15 years ago, right? So we've been for many years serving creatives and giving photographers, video creators, and graphic designers the resources they needed for their projects, right? Excuse me. And at some point, now more than 3 years ago, we saw how the technology was evolving, and we saw DALL-E 2. That was kind of the big change moment when OpenAI released a new model called DALL-E 2. And before, all the models had been, even DALL-E 1 and other models, they were like a demo. You know, they were like, this is cool, but it's so far to be usable. That it didn't look like...
Are they getting better now?
Oh, they are getting better and better, very fast, actually. So,
like, I've used DALL-E 1, and I agree with you, cool, but I couldn't use it.
Yeah, exactly. So when they released DALL-E 2, for us was like, wow, this thing is coming for us, right? Like, this is it's going to allow people to create their own images of what they need. They no longer need to use a stock image. You no longer need to worry if someone else is also downloading the same image and using it for something else, because the images will, it will be what you need, exactly what you need and unique for you, right? So when we understood that, that was the moment we decided we had to change the course of the company.
Now, I want to ask you, because of your job in terms of trying to grow the company in various market sector, which market sector do you think is the hardest to grow in? And do you think is there a language layer that it probably in the cultural scheme of things, in the cultural buy-in into a brand that enters into the conversation that you probably haven't solved yet and you're trying to solve?
Yeah, that's a good question. In terms of segments, we basically see three main segments, right, of customers. So from more easiest to more difficult, right? The easiest one is video production. So the segment of people producing videos professionally, even films, right? Like filmmaking. This is the value the AI adds is so high. It replaces a lot of investment, right? So it's kind of a easy conversation. Then the second one is agencies, like through companies that create content for others, right? So mm-hmm. agencies, they also see AI as a huge opportunity because now they can increase the number of customers, right? And they can serve more customers at lower cost and also a faster speed, right? But then the most difficult one is brands, like marketing teams in brands, right? And the reason is it's difficult is because they've been farther removed from the production itself, because when a marketing team in a brand, they require something, normally they would use an agency, right? And now they can bring the production in-house to the teams. And that requires a new language, that requires a new way of understanding the problem, because it's no longer, I'm going to manage a budget and I'm going to go to an agency. It's more like, okay, I'm going to take it in-house. I'm going to learn the language of production. I'm going to do it my own, right? So this is kind of where we see a little bit more difficulty, but it's actually changing fast, and a lot of brands are actually jumping in and taking ownership of production.
Which bring the question is, I guess the evident question or the obvious question is, what happened to the internal marketing departments now for large enterprises? And what happened to the suppliers of those large enterprises as well? Like, let's say I'm a marketing department for a bank, and I chose Magnific, for instance, as my tool. And now I'm using, I internalized my graphic design, my support, et cetera. So probably I'm less reliant now on my supply chain, on my suppliers. Have you walked through this? What are you reading? What's the impact?
Yeah, that is something we see a lot. It's a very difficult question. There's no easy way. Right? There's no easy or one solution fits for everybody, because if you're a bank, right, and you, in the past, you used to contract agencies, right, for your content, now you face two options, right? You can hire a software like Magnific, cut the spend with your agency and do it on your own, right? Or what you can do is you can also keep working with your agency and ask your agency to use AI, right? So you can ramp up production. And what we are seeing is a combination of both. Some teams are, as I was saying before, some internal teams are ready to bring production in-house, but they require maybe different profiles, right? They now require to hire some creatives in the team to actually control and drive the AI. Some others, they still prefer to rely on the agency. And our software in the enterprise version, it allows for this type of collaboration, right? So at the end of the day, what we see is it's something in between. We see the enterprises will pay a license, right, to be enterprise customer of Magnific, and then they will onboard their teams, and they will also onboard their agencies. So you end up having a collaboration platform where the agency will work under the legal framework and protection that the Magnific Enterprise software provides with the client, which is the bank in this case, and they can create the assets, but they can also bring in the review flows and, you know, the approval flows and other different things that happen in the past, mostly offline. They can also now happen in the platform, right? So this is kind of what we are seeing. It's like not all the agencies are being cut from the picture, and not all the teams are becoming production houses, right? It's something in between based on collaboration.
So there is a shift in the workflow process.
Absolutely. It's a new workflow, and that's where this other area of my team, which is the professional services team, comes in to help companies understand this new workflow.
Now, you use the term controllable AI. What's that phrase doing? And that phrase is doing a lot of work, actually, because most of AI images tools have used, I've seen produce widely inconsistent results. I mean, I've used Gemini I pull my hair out every time I use Gemini. It's just so inconsistent. It just makes me cry sometimes. I'll be doing a lot of work. I'm on my last step. I go to Gemini, generate something, and it just corrupts everything that I'm doing. And I have to use exact prompting. I'm using exact prompting. Like I'm good at prompting, I think, after so many years of using it. It's not the prompting the issue. I don't know if the model is correct, or I have no idea what's going on in the background. What does controllable actually mean in practice? And how do you enforce it on almost 175 million assets each month?
Yeah. So what we mean with controllable is like exactly that. It's like we give you deep control of the generation, right? And this happens at the application layer, right? So the model is always going to be non-deterministic, and it can always give you different results and non-consistent results. But there are ways that we enable for you at the application level to fix that, right? So, for example, something we allow our users to create a library, right, of prompts, a library of resources, let's say a library of backgrounds, and a library of characters or objects that can be... Sorry, I think my internet is not... Can you hear me well?
Yeah, I can hear you. No, it's fine. You're still coming through.
Okay. So for example, creating this library of content that can be reused, if you do it properly, you will obtain a lot of consistency in your videos. And you do a video today, and then a video next week, you're going to be using the same core objects, achieving consistency. The other thing we do is we aggregate many different models from many different providers. Google Gemini is one of them, but also ByteDance, they have C-Dream, or all the providers. And the system can help you decide when to use which model to get the best results, right? So there are a lot of things.
So you can pick the model you want, Jose? You can pick the model?
Yes, we have dozens of models. You can select them, or you can go in auto mode.
Now, Jose, there are a lot of discussions globally around copyright safety and how people are controlling the image generation. So there are some countries that are putting a lot of challenges to image generation platform to control it. Obviously, you don't want people to using it for wrong reasons. And you say, for instance, I've seen somewhere copyright safety is built into your platform. Can you speak to a little bit about that?
Yeah, obviously, copyright and safety is a very, very important topic in AI, and it's it's a concern that many companies and users have. The way we see it's like AI is just a tool, right? So and doesn't replace your responsibility over the content you produce and how you respect other users' content, right? So that being said, this problem happened before with a previous generation of computer-assisted design, Photoshop, or let's call it 3D Studio. So you could always you always had to be careful with the other people's copyright, right? So in that sense, it's no different than before. It's just now it has potential to infringe copyright at scale, right? So the responsibility is larger. What we provide is the models provide a level of protection or guardrails. So you cannot generate, for example, something that is under a brand or the name of a celebrity or so. At the model level, there is certain things that cannot be done, right? There is control. And also at the application level, we basically, so we think that the model is responsible for controlling, but we add some more control specifically for illegal content, right? Like, all the very problematic content around child pornography or, you know, very ugly stuff that we have a second layer of protection. And then in our enterprise version, we also offer legal indemnity. And legal indemnity, this is a concept we inherited from the stock photography days. And it's basically, if you would, as a user, generate something, then someone else would sue you because they think they own the content. Magnific will protect you in court, right? As soon as you never intended to infringe others' copyright. And that is actually how we provide a safe legal framework for companies to use AI, without having to worry about this too much.
Now, when you are operating, obviously you have a million customers out there, a million subscribers. They don't all come from a single country, right? So many of them come from different parts of the world. Where I work in, the localization industry primarily, we talk about a lot about transcreation. For instance, if somebody works for a company, let's say in this case, we'll use an example, Starbucks, and they're creating an image, let's say in Seattle, and that image has to go to Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. Is there a possibility to culturally adapt these images to those regions? And does the user have to do a lot of prompting, or is that inherited in the generation?
Yeah, this is a very common use case, like localizing assets, right? It can be done with images, can be done with videos, and it's very, very simple. You can do it at the prompting level, but normally we have a more advanced tool that we call Spaces. And then you will create a space, and Spaces, it's a infinite Canva tool where you, in this canvas, you create workflows with nodes and arrows, right? And you will set up, let's say you're creating a video where a lady comes in, orders a coffee, and drinks the coffee, right? So there is this lady would be of a different race, right? In different locations. The space may look a little bit different, more adapted to the culture, and the language would be a different language, right, when they speak. So you will create this flow in Spaces for the sequence, right? Let's say it's a video. And then you will add alternative generations, right? So you only basically create this once, and then you execute 20 times and you do variations, right? So basically you save a lot of time and a lot of work, and you get perfectly localized content for different markets.
So we can take into consideration like cultural nuances, adaptation to a culture, what's allowed, what's not allowed in a specific region, right? So, and the user does not have to initiate that. I'm assuming it's, if I say, as in part of the prompt, for instance, take this image, adapt it to Saudi Arabia. The image knows that.
Yes, the model, and the model has a lot of concepts in it. I will always say that, especially localization, right? It can get very nuanced, and I would not go and trust the model in this case 100%, right? So we normally advise to do human reviews and to check on your content and prompt in a more detailed way, right? Because you know, you could have like inconsistencies or nothing replace the knowledge of the local market, right? So especially when you are in a remote place and you have no deep knowledge of the differences, right, in another market, you cannot rely on the model 100% for this type of problems.
Yeah. And no, of course you can't rely on it, but at least it gets the job done.
Yes.
To begin with, and then you still have to verify, you have to adjust, you have to tell it to fix it, etc. If you see something that is wrong, but at least it gets you there.
Yeah, absolutely. It will go 90% of the way.
Yeah. Now, where does Magnific right now sits in a competitive landscape? And I think I have a podcast coming up with one of your competitors, the head of global development for Adobe is coming online in a few weeks. Just wondering from your competitive landscape. So when you sit as a CRO, as a chief growth officer, and you look around and say, who are my competitors? And from what I've seen, you know, doing the research before our call and just going through some of the statistics that I've seen out there, Adobe Firefly is an interesting conversation. Canva, Midjourney, and there are other, you know, dozen enterprise DAM out there, digital asset management platforms. They're all adding a generative AI. I guess AI is the flavor of the day now, and everybody is plugging AI into their systems, regardless if it's native AI or not native AI. You sound like you designed the system AI from the ground up. Meanwhile, others are coming in and just plugging AI into their existing systems. What's your honest view on this? What do you think you stack up in terms of competitiveness?
Yeah, there is fierce competition out there, right? And so AI, it's kind of super hot right now. There is a lot of money in being invested, right? So very, very strong competitive market. The way we see is like we see Magnific operating on the application layer, right? And there is many, many others that play in the application layer, like Adobe Firefly. There is also like Runway, Crea. So there is many, many other solutions. But we also compete a little bit upstream, right, with the content providers, right? So people using AI to provide content, and also downstream with the model providers and the companies that are actually we partner with them too, right? Like this would be your OpenAIs, Anthropic, and other tech companies, right? So this is like a 360 ecosystem where we sometimes need to compete upstream or downstream or to the sides, right? And it's evolving very, very quickly. It's there is kind of a race for who is going to be the Adobe of the AI world, right? And it could be Adobe itself. Right? There is a lot of displacement happening of traditional tools in the CGI world, in the VFX world, in the video and image creation, right? So many, many tools that have been there for years are now being replaced or displaced with more native AI tools.
Now, you know, I've worked in the localization industry, the language industry, for the past 25, 26 years. And my characterization of the language industry, the localization industry, is undervalued industry. You know, your customers think of us as a cost center. And this is the debate that we've been having with our markets from a localization industry. We would love to turn this around from a cost center to a revenue enabler. If you don't translate, you can't sell, or that kind of thing. I guess from a visual content, it feels like a similar problem you're facing, meaning that some of your customers are considering it I'm assuming some of your customers are considering a cost center versus the cost of doing business. And if I don't have it, if I don't have the visual content, there's no revenue. Do you go across that? Do you come across this conversation? How do you handle this?
Yeah, we see this happen a lot in the market. I think we see, or something we try to help our customers do, is to understand that now they can do more, right? And they don't need to be limited by technology or cost to do just the mandatory things to be out there. They can now do many different things and go farther. For example, in the advertisement segment, many, many brands were limited to a green screen, 20-second ads, and that was actually a cost limitation, right? So right now, they can do longer format. They can do multi-location because it's all AI, right? So they can do, instead of doing an ad, they can do a mini TV show about their brand and make it episodic weekly, right? So if you think about it like this, it's like, why are brands not creating longer format? It's because they couldn't. Now they can. So we are hoping that they all embrace this and see the creation of content as a larger opportunity rather than just something they had to do and was not in the center of their marketing. But now the opportunity is way larger and accessible to them.
You know, I want to mention to the audience here as we continue talking about this one, while I'm talking to Jose, I went on his website, by the way, Jose, I went on your magnific.com. I logged in as a Google user and I am looking at the interface and I'm really impressed with the interface. It's much different. You're right. It is a controlled AI because what I've faced from a challenges perspective, and everybody knows on the channel that I use AI everywhere. You know, the beside this conversation that you and I are having right now, AI is involved in the post-editing on every single step. Now, I can't do what I do unless I have AI. I mean, I got to become an army of one. I need a lot of resources to get this show on the road, basically, literally. And what I'm looking at right now, and I'm going to do like just do a favor here for you as I do this conversation. What I'm going to do is I'm going to share my screen with the audience for 1 second here. So the, well, more than 1 second, I guess. I'll give you guys a bit in a minute, maybe to appreciate what Jose and I were talking about. So what impressed me about this is the following. Now, I can pick the model from the top here. And also, I logged in, you know, with my Google account. I was not asked to put my credit card as something else. Some other models will ask you up there. It's really appreciative from me as a single operator operating a podcast channel. Now, the second thing that I'm really impressed about is we can pick the model here. We can go in and just pick whatever we want, whatever works. We can add a character, say I want to put a, sorry, I'm doing a demo here based on my evaluation of your software with, while we are talking and only spend like a minute asking you a question and going through the screens. I'm not sure if I'm doing a good job here, but you can take over anytime you want to. Adding a character, I'm assuming here I can upload my own image if I want to create a YouTube thumbnail. And by putting the image up, now I can describe the thumbnail that I would like to create in this specific prompt. Now, in order for me to do this natively at Gemini, Nano Banana, for instance, or DALL-E 1 or DALL-E 2, it will take a very long prompt. And currently what I have to do is I have to go to Anthropic, create this long specific prompt of what I'm trying to do, and then feed it back to the next generation engine, which really, it's a nightmare. I do the entire post-editing process in about an hour. Just to create a thumbnail, it takes me 15 minutes. I don't have a 15 minutes to generate. So this is, in my opinion, I'm going to try it out and I'm going to report back to everybody when we do the post-editing for this particular episode. I'll use your image generation to generate the thumbnail and I'll report it back to the audience, the listeners, and to you, and we'll tag you in everything I do here. But I thought to mention this screen because this is different. This is different than anything I've used in the past.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for sharing with the listeners, yeah.
Thank you so much for bearing with me while I do this, everybody. I thought you guys should know this, what Jose and I have been talking about. So I'm impressed. I got to try it out because I'm looking for something. So that's good. Now, for Magnific, for instance, it works for both individual creator and large enterprise, individual creators such as myself and or large enterprises as well. Those are very different types of buyers because you've got a single buyer, who have a limited amount of revenue or a limited amount of expenses to spend. And you've got larger corporations where they probably have a bit more revenue to spend on larger projects. So the need around brand control also differ because, you know, a single guy like me doing what I do, I feel like a single operator like me, I feel like I'm okay with that, no problem. But a larger company would say, I've got a brand specifics. You know, the font should be something, the logo should be specific something, the headers, etc. They've got a bunch of things they need to control. And that's a tangible, this tension. Is it sustainable at scale, do you think, on your side? Can you sustain that at scale?
Yeah, I think when we look at individuals or enterprise, for us, the main difference is actually the sales motion, right? So individuals will be what we call a self-serve motion. So you can go there, click one button, you log in with your Google account, right? Super simple, self-serve, no, you don't need to talk to anyone. But in enterprise, it's a longer conversation, right? So you will go into our website, you read about what we do, you will check our features, etc., and then you have to talk to our sales team. So it's a sales-led motion, right? So, and then the team, we have sales account executives all over the world. They will support you locally, and they will talk to your company to see what you need, right? What are your needs? What are your requirements to prepare an enterprise package tailored to you, right? Apart from that, most of the product itself, especially when it comes to the creativity side, is the same, right? So it's the same product. Obviously, one, it's an individual product. The other one is more a teams. So you can, there is a few differences in organization. Like you can create projects, you can collaborate, have different roles, etc. But the rest is all the same, right? So we managed to create kind of a core functionality that doesn't change and build around it, right? And so far it's growing well at scale, and it's allowing us to, work on a core experience that is consistent. Because a lot of our customers, they actually start individual, and then they join or they invite their teams, right? So this is, and we don't want them to see a different product, right? We want them to keep enjoying the same experience that they love already.
And how big is your sales team?
We are sales over 40 people right now, and then adjacent teams like revenue, support, customer success management. It's over 70 people, right, in total.
And where are they distributed? Where are they located?
Our two largest sales teams are in Europe and North America, but we also have people in South America, Middle East, Korea, Japan, Singapore, and now in China too, and India also.
Where?
India.
India, okay. Now, one of the things I do beside podcasting is I own and I run a consulting company called N49 Networks, which focuses on go-to-market and revenue growth. And I also run a recruiting company based in Dublin. So if there is any interest from anybody out there that it's probably interested, if you are interested, if your team is interested in some of these services, we'll be happy to chat with you later. And I didn't mean for the podcast to turn that way. And that's just to mention it all the time in my podcast anyway, because many people don't know what I do, to be honest with you. They think of me as the podcast guy, but podcasting is one of the three things I do. One is go to market. And the second is AI automation for sales. And third is podcasting. So I would love to continue the conversation if there's an opportunity, no pressure. Now, one of the things that I keep running into personally, and I've seen it many times, the faster you give creative team AI tools, the faster that they are going to produce, right? So content is going to become like a big hose coming out of it. Like lots of content is going to be produced, but speed tend to me sometimes erodes, it cancels judgment in some cases, right? Because, I was doing in this interview with a capital investment firm out of New York a couple of weeks ago. And I asked the question, I said, how are you guys deploying AI? He says, where everybody uses it and I encourage my team to use it. I said, oh, okay. So do you have any guardrails around it? I said, one. I said, what is it? He said, I told everybody, look, don't tell me you made a mistake on an email and blame AI for it. You put if you made a mistake on an email and AI made it, you own it. So the fact that we produce something with AI, which is, he brings a valid point. You produce something with AI and guess what? You still own that. As an individual, it's still on you and you can't come back and say, sorry, the model didn't work. Have you came across that? How did you solve for that?
Yeah, absolutely. This is so AI does not replace your responsibility, right? On what you produce, what you put out there, your message and all of that. And something we try to help our customers a lot with is it doesn't mean you have to produce now in a cheaper way or in a faster way, right? Or lower the quality. The way we see, and we never position AI like now you need, you are going to save a lot of money. So the way we position it and where we've seen it having more success is when you look at it as a multiplier of the number of takes you can have. Like, let's say you need to shoot a scene, right, for a commercial, and you have limited budget, right? So in the past, you get two takes, right? Take one, take two, and that's it. You'll pick the best one of the two. With AI now, you can do 20 takes, and you can kind of multiply your options, and this way the quality should go up, right? Because you are trying many more times with the same cost or even lower cost, and with the same time or even less time, right? So we always position AI like it's going to raise the quality of your output because it's going to allow you to try many more times with the same effort.
Okay. Just by the way, I just noticed, just out of curiosity here, I was just checking to see if we're connected on LinkedIn, Jose. I found out that we're not connected. So I hope you don't mind, I just sent you a connection request.
Please, I love it.
And I see that you're connected to one of my good friends, Shaheen, out of Malaga. Do you know her?
Let me know.
Shaheen Samavati, she owns a company called Vera Content.
Sorry. The name doesn't ring a bell.
Yeah, she's in Malaga. I thought you guys are, I know Malaga is a big town. I'm not saying Malaga is a small town. So not everybody knows everybody. I get that.
No, also, I'm connected to so many people now in my LinkedIn that I lost a little bit of the control over there. Yeah,
that's fine. That's okay. But anyway, I wanted to, as we come to the hour here, I want to make sure that I addressed all my question. one more for you, if you don't mind, and then we'll go into the wrap up section. In a mid-market, if a mid-market company, like 200 people company, SaaS business, going from three market to 12, they're going through market expansion. I came to you today and said, we need visual content strategy for international expansion. What is the first thing you'll tell them they probably don't want to hear?
I would say AI doesn't really make it any easier, right? Market expansion, it's a very, very tough, and AI is not going to replace the having to be there on the ground and having to understand the market, which is all this research I think is the most important side. So yeah, I think that would be like, don't get your expectations too high with making this way simpler, because still it's going to require a lot of effort.
And Jose, if you had to leave the audience today with one thing from our today's conversation, one idea they should take back to their team on Monday, what is it?
I always say the same. It's like, embrace AI even faster than that you want, right? It's like the speed of AI, it surprises everybody every week, right? Even the people who are building it, right, get surprised every week, right? So whatever you are doing now and you think you are doing enough is not enough. Like, you have to embrace it faster than you thought.
And just again, for the audience, I already sent you a connection request on LinkedIn, but for the audience, people who are interested and after listening to this conversation, they want to probably connect with you or find you or explore the platform. How do they do that? Where can they people find you, connect with you and the platform?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm Jose Florido, easy to find. I'm also Jose Florido X, though I'm not super active there, but I still read X a lot. For the platform, yeah, just go to magnific.com, sign up, give it a spin. It's easy to do a quick test. It's with a free account, takes a minute.
Yeah. I really appreciate it. Jose, before I wrap it up, hey, I want to ask you a question here. What is what's your impression? This is your, my understanding is your first podcast. What's your impression?
We had a fun chat, as you said at the beginning, just two friends having coffee and talking about something they like and enjoy. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, I really appreciate your time with me and thank you so much. Did you cover everything that you wanted to cover? Is there anything missing from our conversation?
No. It was very thorough. We covered a lot, actually. It's super interesting, I hope. Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And I hope, you know, by the end, when we publish this episode, the audience engage with you. I guess that's the intention here. I am definitely going to give it a try, give magnific.com a try. I'm going to generate the thumbnail for this cool YouTube video through magnific.com. And I'll give you my honest feedback on LinkedIn. I'll send you a little note.
Please do. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, I really appreciate it. And do you have a YouTube channel for your company or anything? Do you want me to add you as a collaborator?
We do. We do have a Magnific YouTube.
If you can ask your marketing team to reach out to me and send me the YouTube channel, I'll add you as a collaborator so you guys can share the... I produce about 30 videos from each episode. So you guys can share these videos around and pass them around to your network.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah.
Yeah, appreciate it. And I just want to thank you so much for staying up. It's a 3:05 in Beijing. And what a trooper you are. Thanks for staying up for me for this conversation. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me. It was very fun and great chatting with you.
And I hope next time I meet you, it'll be in Malaga over a coffee, my favorite town.
I would love that for sure.
Jose Florido, thank you so much for joining me on this recording of this particular episode 247. Jose Florido, ladies and gentlemen, he's the Chief Growth Officer for Magnific.com, formerly FreePick. And if you haven't heard of them yet, you should hear of them. And if you haven't tried the platform, I think you should give it a try. I gave you a little demo online here, but you should give it a try. I think it's pretty interesting. I want to thank everybody, the audience, for joining us. If you're coming on YouTube, thanks for watching us on YouTube. I appreciate it. And thanks for liking, commenting, and sharing the content as you always do. I really appreciate your support. And if you're listening to us on the audio channels, thanks for listening in. And also, I want to remind you of our blog site, where I archive or summarize these conversations in an archivable form where you can actually read them over 5 minutes. You can download the app, by the way, where you can have us on your mobile phone now. I've I launched an app about a couple of weeks ago. It's app.l10nfiresidechat.com. So I'm going to repeat that. app.l10nfiresidechat.com. Once you open it on your browser, you just add it to your home screen and it becomes an icon on your mobile phone. You can search by video, audio, or blog. You can search your favorite episode, etc. So it gives you access to all of our content in the palm of your hand. I want to thank everybody again, and I will see you guys at the next episode. I'm tired. It's Friday afternoon. There's a beer waiting for me somewhere. And Jose needs to go to bed. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you next episode. Bye now.